A Reputation Unaccompanied. Written by Silent Walrus. Read by Opal Song. Fandom, Full Metal Alchemist. Rating, teen. Relationship, Ed Roy. Also tagged for tomato soup, chocolate cake, and Chowder the Amazing Accomplice Dog. Part 17 of Caveat Emptor.
Days went by, trying to forget her face. It was you and I. We were too young for these games. All the pictures that I kept, all the things I should have said. It was you and I, but mostly me.
Roy Knox. For a moment, he's convinced he's somehow gotten the wrong place, despite this being the only second-floor apartment, because there's the distinct sound of dog claws skittering on wood. The door opens, revealing, indeed, a dog, soaking wet, dripping suds. And Ed, in a state very much similar. "Oh," Roy says. "Hello, Chowder." Ed grabs her just as she tries to launch herself at Roy. He also doesn't proceed to immediately slam the door in Roy's face, which is a start.
"May I come in?"
Roy asks. He holds up the stack of takeout.
"I brought food."
Ed turns and wrestles the dog into the apartment without a word, too fast for Roy to read his expression. Roy might have tried to say something. Only once he crosses the threshold, he's immediately distracted by the shrine to Jing he appears to have inadvertently walked into. Is what comes out instead. Thanks to dim memories of New Year and going to temple as a child, Roy is fairly sure the scripts posted up over the doorway are blessings. Good luck, purification, protection against evil. They're fairly distinctive.
"Are you expecting..."
That gets Ed to glance back, halfway through bodily carrying Chowder through the bathroom doorway. "It's Maze." That doesn't explain why his apartment looks like it was outfitted by one of the more militant monk sects who believe in literal battle against evil. But then again, Mei Chung's first impression of Amstrass was of a demonic trap architected by supernatural forces bent on the absolute destruction of anything within its borders. So perhaps she's decided better safe than sorry when she lives here. Ed casts an eye over the trail of water and soap slicking the hallway, then gives Roy a hard glance. "Make yourself useful. Mop all this up." Roy does it. He's got to take his shoes off first, which is, somehow, a mental stumbling block he hadn't anticipated and is disproportionately affected by. Of course he'd have to take his shoes off. He knew he'd be coming here, knew Ed would most likely let him inside. Bad enough he'd caught himself taking a little more care as to which waistcoat he wore tonight, how he paused before leaving his hair unstyled. Coming here armored won't get him anything he wants. There aren't guest slippers that he can see, because the only ones available are either bright pink and half the size of his foot, or emblazoned with tiny pastel cat heads, clearly Al's. So he's left in his socks, which feels like a hospitality trespass that goes both ways. He doesn't find a mop, but there's a floor rag drying on the radiator, so he rolls his sleeves up, crouches down, and starts cleaning up. He ends by the bathroom, as the last of the water there becomes less of a spill in the space and more a majority shareholder. The doors open, and Ed's kneeling with his back to Roy at the bathtub, wrestling chowder through a laundering process similar to an industrial car wash. There's so much water being thrown around that it's even slopped down Ed's back, the thin fabric of his shirt gone translucent under the haphazard bun of his half-soaked hair. Roy hadn't thought over much about touching Ed as a suitor. He's gone on so many dates as a matter of professional necessity that it was second nature to stroke Ed's hair and lay a hand on his nape while focusing all of his actual attention on their surroundings, their positioning, their watchers. The patterns of meaningless intimacy are easy to slip into. Just another pair of gloves he takes on and off for work. But now there's just Ed, with his heavy jaw and heavy hair and clinging wet shirt, soap flecked over his legs and suds running down his forearms. He's young and handsome and strong, skilled and driven, frighteningly smart. He knows exactly who and what Roy is. He wants Roy anyway. Roy steps back out of the doorway, retreating to the kitchen. He considers the territory, then begins to unpack the food and set the table. He'd stopped by the cafe that catered their little hospital adventure. Their food isn't very good by even his standards, but their drinks are their forte, and there's another almond milkshake waiting for Ed. The water shuts off. There's some thumping and grunting, then Chowder comes clattering out of the bathroom, beelining for Roy with the towel still slung over her back. Roy manages to catch it onto her before she can jump up on him or shake, which he supposes puts him on drying duty. Chowder loves it, thinks it's a game, wiggling madly under his hands. And when Roy looks up, Ed's in the doorway. He doesn't make another move into his own kitchen, just stands there, giving the table a long, tense-mouthed look.
"You may as well change," Roy says, nodding at Ed's sodden clothes. "Go on, I'll get her dry."
Ed comes back in house pants and one of his familiar sleeveless tanks, muscles shifting under his skin as he starts opening takeout containers. It's strange to see him back in black after so much color, but it somehow only makes him stand out more. Laid against the dark clothes, Ed's skin is warm, his hair bright. And Roy realizes he's gotten a haircut. With his hair down and drying, Roy can see it's only just past his chin now. And with his bangs almost all grown out, it's all very nearly one length. One of his ever-present necklace chains is tangled up, half caught in his collar. Roy is so caught up in some kind of asinine color theory that it takes him several seconds to realize that Ed sat down, stabbed a fork into the slice of chocolate cake, levered off a piece, and dipped it directly into the tomato soup. "What are you?" Ed's eyes flick up at him, and the comfortable routine sniping dies in Roy's mouth. There's no familiar spark of belligerence there, no gleeful defiance. There's not even resentment, just a reservedness, a tiredness, an impatience. Ed will let Roy do whatever it is he came to do so that he will go away, so that this will pass out of his life like so many other abrasions and slips and bruises. He's waiting for Roy to leave. The cold slice of adrenaline down Roy's spine is as familiar as that first bullet that hissed through his hair outside Darío's. This is for real. All the alarm Mace and Risa and Chris talked him down from comes slamming back, much less formless this time. He has fucked up, exactly as hard as the fear told him he had. He'd just been wrong about how. He does not know how to apologize to Ed. He doesn't know what to offer. All of this is as icily clear as the fact that he must apologize, correct
directly, effectively, right now, and then keep going. He hadn't realized how differently Ed looked at him from other people, how much time and regard and attention Ed had for him until he saw it gone. And Roy is frankly unnerved at how he wants it back. It's a familiar kind of brand held to the back of his brain. Fix it. He came here to clear the air, restore their relationship to good terms, to make their positions clear. To, if things went that way, feel out what it might look like to follow Mace's and Chris's and Risa's advice. That's not the objective anymore. There's a pressure building in him, like magnetic poles misaligned. It's a kinetic charge he first learned under fire, that if he doesn't move now, there will be no later. He's got to charm Ed to his knees. This is going to be a goddamn shit show. We need to talk, Roy starts. Because what the hell else is there? Look, I had to, okay? Ed says immediately, letting the fork smack down with its tomato cake uneaten, which is not what Roy expected. If you were there, you would have done the same. The dam was about to go. What? Roy says, bewildered. Dam? Yeah. Doublet, major quake, incoming rainstorm. I kept 20,000 tons of coal slurry from dropping into the lake. Roy's still stuck trying to see how this has to do with anything.
Good?
You have no idea what the fuck I'm talking about, Ed says flatly.
Doublet,
Roy repeats, trying to meet Ed's priorities and orient himself to why Ed thinks they deserve a personal visit.
You were outed as Full Metal?
No, Ed says after a second. Not really, but the Doublet Garrison Command are probably gonna have questions. I did a shit ton of alchemy, mostly on military property.
You were on the ground. You made the call, Roy says, a bit impatiently. Is there something I need to know about it?
No, Ed says more slowly, eyeing him with somewhat uncertain speculation. That was it. I figured it was dark and raining, and people know Teacher can do what I can. We can pin it on her. But she was all the way across town doing a lot of other really public alchemy at the time, so probably just better if the LTC down there doesn't ask questions.
I'll put Brita on it, Roy promises, and when Ed doesn't say anything more, just watches him,
inhales and exhales slowly.
That's not what I came to speak with you for. I meant that we should discuss our conversation.
Conversation, Ed repeats, accommodating as a bear trap.
You said you were...
Roy finds himself running a hand through his hair, the sheer inanity of the words into me translating into amateur physical tells.
Interested in me, and that it's been years.
Ed's face hardens a little further. He folds his arms over his chest, too tight to be casual. And?
I'd like to know your thoughts,
Roy says, inwardly wincing.
What you want, what you see it as.
Ed says, what? An extremely fair response, given Roy's about one more sentence away from just dribbling on himself. You don't think we said all we needed to say? Ed says, in a controlled, even voice, too pissed to even swear. All right, then, let's hear it.
Roy deserves this. I'd like to discuss your position, he says, to see whether it could be viable.
That was certainly not the best possible way to phrase it, but Roy's still taken aback by the sudden snarl on Ed's mouth. For fuck's sake, what do you want? He hisses. And don't give me, I saw your face when I told you, asshole. You were not happy.
because I'd missed a critical aspect of our relationship for years, Roy says, further taken aback by Ed's vehemence. He hasn't gotten vitriol like that since Ed was a child. Perhaps he shouldn't be surprised. He holds Ed's gaze. Ed, the last time I missed something that significant in the people around me, my team was disbanded into combat zones and Hawkeye was made Bradley's aide. I reacted poorly when you told me, and I never would have asked you to step out with me if I'd known. It's cruel to tease.
So what do you want? Ed throws up his hands. What the hell is it you need so bad that you think you gotta dick me to get it? Just tell me. You think you can't just tell me? What? You think I backed your stupid coup just because I thought you were pretty? Just spit it the fuck out and fucking quit treating me like I'm some half-committed baby bitch you gotta snow. He adds bitterly, I'm not gonna defect to Jing just because a boy doesn't like me.
This isn't about that, Ed. There's no plot. I mean it. I told you all the plots. You go looking for answers. It's smarter to just read you in and prevent you from accidentally interfering.
This is coming out all wrong. Roy exhales.
Ed, I told you that when you need something, I want you to just ask me. When I want something from you, I'm just asking too.
Ed just keeps glaring at him, refusing to trust, which... Well, Roy supposes he deserves also. He's been as straightforward with Ed as he can be ever since the spectacular fuck-up of the Ross incident. But that was a pretty big incident, and it's not as though he doesn't understand why Ed's stuck by the metaphorical balance book for so long. It's safer when you know exactly what the cost is, when there are limits on what you'll ask and be asked in return. And Ed may have the crush, but hasn't Roy been the one inviting Ed closer all this time? Asking him to step beyond the boundaries of credit and debt? So why are you here now? Ed says, low and harsh, asking about my feelings. Roy takes a deep breath.
Will you let me try again?
A flicker of alarm passes over Ed's face. Try what?
Let me make it up to you, Roy says.
He takes another risk and reaches across the table. Slowly. And Ed looks briefly shocked enough that he doesn't stop Roy from carefully unfolding his arms.
Let me apologize.
He takes Ed's hands in his own on the table.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to insult you or dismiss you. I should have paid more attention.
Ed's right hand is noticeably cooler than his left. His knuckles bonier. Two of his fingers are still taped. Roy keeps the weight of his hands light, but dares a squeeze.
I didn't react the right way.
Ed swallows, staring at their hands. His mouth briefly twists in half-hearted bitterness. There's a right way? Roy smiles, knowing it comes out as constructed as it is charming. But Ed's unmoved by charm anyway, and knows all about Roy's constructions besides.
You're interested? I'm flattered. Tell me more. Incidentally, did you know I happen to be single?
Ed's face shudders again, fast. But just for a moment, there's a flash of something else. Painfully open, raw, hurting with hope. Roy thinks. He doesn't need to be given a way in. He just needs to know there is one. Ed's face is closed up tight again, pinched in unhappiness. But Roy knows what he saw. Ed wants to forgive him. How else would they be here to begin with? If he hadn't already absolved Roy of worse. If he hadn't been taking worse from Roy this whole time. Of course. Wanting something doesn't mean you're going to pursue it. Ed withdraws his hands, folding his arms again, and says, flatly, why are you single? That, at least, is routine enough to have an easy answer, even a true one.
practicality and personal preference. Roy says, who'd be my partner?
Ed gives an incredulous scoff. Any one of the other goddamn political bastards looking to marry up and take over the country?
Roy has to blink, cut short. Ed, I'm an awful political match, he says disbelievingly. In any union, it would be me marrying up, not the other way around. My wallet is nowhere near deep enough for anyone looking to become a rich widow. And in any case, my wealth is in my salary, not in any inheritance, and dies when I do. Those looking for power will know that I won't dilute my own. Anyone taking me on would have to assume the consequences of my reputation, not just personally, but professionally. A flighty, fundamentally unfaithful liar, with a lifespan measured by the enemies I've made. I am a risk before I am ever any kind of reward, and the risk is not small.
So why aren't you with Hawkeye? Ed says tightly. If you're not waiting on a political marriage, if, whatever, nobody else wants you, why not? And don't give me any fucking bullshit about regulations. That takes longer to answer. There's no good way to say we can't. There's no good way to explain we're past that. There definitely isn't a good way to say, oh, certainly, we've had sex. I was blind. She had an open artery. It was a pile of rubble. We managed about one third of a thrust before she grabbed my neck and I sobbed into her hair and we both nearly passed out from oxygen deprivation in the second crater to the left of God's corpse. So you see why there was no second date.
We don't have that kind of relationship, Roy says instead,
knowing he's speaking more slowly.
You know that. You know what she has to do.
Ed's jaw clenches. He looks down, silent, and Roy's struck all over again by the fact that Ed not only knows, he understands. It hadn't been a kindness, after all, for Ed's father to put himself forward as payment for Al at the 11th hour. It's not a good thing Roy has done, demanding Reza armed at his back. Ed looks up again, from behind the spill of hair that slipped down from behind his ear. What happens, he says tensely, if I say no? Always a possibility. Roy lays his hands on the table, holding Ed's gaze.
We accelerate the timeline. We fight, you slap me, it ends. My distraction will be fulfilled by whatever theatrics proceed as the result of a failed midlife crisis.
He realizes how aggressively he's sitting and doesn't try reaching for Ed's hands again. But he does try to make his posture a little less negotiating stockbroker.
And I hope that you will at least indulge me in a little time spent together, after, privately. You are a friend, Ed. It doesn't do for me to realize I've been so negligent that I've missed such regard in a friend.
It sits between them in the quiet room. The only sound is the distant street noises and the faint clink of tags as Chowder shifts somewhere under the table. I need to think, Ed says, quietly, tightly. We aren't making deals tonight. I need to think.
Of course.
Roy agrees immediately.
It's late.
He's got a foot in the door. Better to let it hold than have Ed chop it off from feeling cornered, overplayed. He stands, leaving the food largely untouched, and Ed does too, after a moment. Chowder surging to her feet with him, rattling along to the door. Ed trailing behind. Roy catches and holds his gaze by the doorway, shifting his heel to wedge his shoes back on with a minimum of awkward fumbling.
There's a mixed industry dinner party this coming Friday. I'm expected to attend as a potential sponsor. I only ask that you let me know whether you'd like to join me by Thursday afternoon.
Ed just looks at him, mouth stuck in that unhappy line, arms still folded tightly, shoulders up. Roy hesitates, but then again, he hasn't gotten to where he is by not taking chances. He reaches over and straightens Ed's necklace. Then, when Ed fails to smack him or step back, turns his hand and lets it slide up Ed's jaw. Ed's eyes are wide as Roy slowly tucks some hair behind his ear, but he doesn't jerk away and he doesn't look miserable anymore. He does look a bit like he wants to hold Roy face down in something caustic, but that's a start. Roy draws his hand back.
You don't have to decide by then, but if you do, it'd make as good a venue as any to slap me.
He shoulders his suit jacket on, opening the door.
Whatever else, I am available to you, Edward. No matter what you decide, that stands.
I'll call, is what Ed says, and the door shuts with Roy out in the hallway. He allows himself another exhale, slow as he can make it. He takes a moment to marvel at the evening's lack of screaming, physical violence, or alchemy, then clatters down the flight of stairs and back out to his car. Ed will call. There are 5 days between now and Thursday. It's not as though Roy thinks he's going to be able to load the dice here. He's made the best move he can. Ed will make the decision he makes. But it never hurts to put in a little extra work. And with Roy starting this far behind, well, he's got a lot of ground to cover. He checks his watch. He has just enough time before close of business. He pulls over at the first payphone he sees and dials.
Ideal Image Medical Spa.
Hey, Tansy, Roy says. Book me a wax this week.
Oh, my, Tansy says, genuinely shocked. Roy, really?
Yes, Roy agrees grimly, and better make it reoccurring.
The end. Author's notes. Ed, you cannot tell me you and Hawkeye didn't fuck.
Roy, oh, we did. She passed out 4 times. I grabbed her tits and went, ugh, because my hands were still open, seeping wounds.
Ed, well, at least it isn't diaper kink.
Roy, what?
The music used in this podfic is Lost in You by Sugar Cult. If you enjoyed this podfic, you can leave feedback for both myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. And from there, you can find a link to the podfic post. And from there, you can find a link to the text post. Thanks for listening.